You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 29th of January. A rewatch of the Rockets and the Jazz leads to one item of concern and generally just an overall poor performance. The Spurs are on the docket today. And still Kobe thoughts to be had. It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, geeky numbers, and hopefully helping you become a better Jazz fan and making it more fun to be a Jazz fan. What is a better fan? That's always a... Never mind. I'm not getting into that stuff. That got into a whole controversy this year. 1280 the zone. I'm not venturing down that road at all. So I rewatched... Ron Boone and I rewatched the Jazz-Rockets game the other night on the plane out. I had a few thoughts for you. So there is one item... there were some interesting things the Rockets did. There was one item of concern. And then generally overall, we just weren't very good. Like, it just, I don't know if it was the Kobe cloud or we just weren't very good. You kind of could see it. We were complaining about the officials very early on. We were grumpy. The Rockets do hold and they're physical with us. But we wanted to bail out and wanted calls everywhere and... Even Donovan, who kind of had it rolling, you could see Donovan trying to egg everyone on all the time throughout the game. Even his kind of overall demeanor lacked the joyousness that he usually has. So I think there's a lot to it. The concerning one is we have a hard time guarding in space. We're not a particularly athletic group. This is, I think, to some extent what happens when you go get shooting. Not to say that shooters aren't athletes or athletes aren't shooters, but if you are both, you're an all-star, right? So the guys that are actually elite athletically and great shooters are making max contracts and are stars. And so, you know, sometimes you make a choice of having a, you know, Al-Farouq Aminu, who's an elite-level athlete, and a knockdown shooter and can't shoot compared to having, you know, the Spurs have Bryn Forbes, who's a knockdown shooter but not a particularly elite-level athlete. So I thought that was evident. We really had a hard time guarding people. Eric Gordon just kept driving by guys. That's a little disconcerting. Like, I'd say that's real. That's something that, you know, everyone's like, oh, the five-out. It's not a five-out issue. It's a guard in space issue. And maybe the answer to the question yesterday, which was, you know, why was Dallas not able to exploit this, is that Dallas actually, Seth Curry's not a very good athlete. He's a, he's a shooter, not an elite level athlete. So maybe, you know, Dallas, when you think about them, Maxi Kleber is a shooter, not an athlete. They didn't have a lot of guys that were just beating you off the bounce. And so the Rockets have a better dribble drive game and ability to just get to the rim. And they attacked Rudy really well. So that's the only thing that I saw that I thought was somewhat replicable. Houston did some really interesting things defensively that are worth keeping an eye on. So we would drive into the lane. They would bring a second guy over to the ball handler and cut off the drive. They would bring the corner defender to take care of Rudy's role. And then this is usually where we torch people by bringing the ball and kicking it to the corners for a Boyan or somebody three. The what happened next was that they sagged their guy off the shooter at the top and took the corner shot away so that you're driving into the lane if you're Donovan, and while the defender comes to you, your natural pass, so let's say you're driving from the left wing, is now to that corner. It's not available. So you actually now have to make a pass kind of back out to the right. It's not the most natural pass. We were not making that pass. And so I think if we saw film and if we were just sharper, we just weren't sharp, right? There was just, that's, I think, the biggest takeaway. And therefore, if we were just a bit sharper, we're making that pass. We're getting them into the scramble. We're getting the blender going. So we were not particularly good at that. We weren't very good, frankly. You know, that's probably the bigger takeaway on all this. We can do all this analysis and look at all these different things. But the truth of the item is we weren't very good. Defensively, we couldn't stay in front of people. Offensively, we weren't making the right pass. We didn't make our shots because they came out of rhythm of the way we usually get them. And then there were some interesting aspects to that where rewatching the game, I mean, they just killed us on the P.J. Tucker pick and roll. But what's so interesting is if Clint Capela plays, they never run the P.J. Tucker pick and roll. It'll be interesting to see what happens next time we play them, how much they play Capela or what they do. But there's some argument that the Clint Capela pick and roll allows us to just do what we want to do. P.J. Tucker playing the five, they run, first of all, P.J. Tucker sets monster picks. Two, our guys just, we weren't very good at getting through things. I mean, we just didn't have a lot of fight that night, right? So we just weren't very good. And as I said, there was just kind of an overall malaise to the way we were playing the game, kind of almost looking for a bailout to what we were doing. So I thought, you know, we were looking at the officials early in the game. There's a play very early where Joe gets bumped and he's complaining for a call. And it's sometimes, you know, that's just symbolic of like what, where your mood is. Your mood is not, you know, I think because of the Kobe cloud, that you're just not entirely there. And so in turn, you end up kind of, right, you're looking for help or bailouts or things like that. I do think that defense that they played was interesting. It's worth keeping an eye on if teams are able to replicate that in any fashion. So it's an interesting game because I've read Twitter and seen what everyone's saying, and we shot pretty well. We did a lot of things really well. So I actually don't think what most people are saying is accurate. I think what, you know, what's replicable is making our guys guard in space. So if you have the capability to drive on our defenders while Rudy's not in the middle of the paint and you can just beat us one-on-one, I'm going to guess that's where we're most susceptible. You know, our isolation defensive numbers are probably okay because more often than not, Rudy's able to get back to be able to impact those plays. But that was what jumped out at me. And we don't. Like, Mike Conley's really small, and Joe Ingles is not a great on-ball defender, and Boyan's not a great on-ball defender, and Donovan's okay, and Royce is pretty darn good. But it's not a strength of ours. And Clarkson battles more than I think he gets credit for, but he's never been thought of as a good defensive player. So it's interesting to me, and it's like a little bit of it also is like our one usual weakness is off handoffs. For whatever reason, we've never been a very good defensive team, at least according to the synergy numbers on handoffs. What is interesting is we're the number one isolation defense in the NBA. And I think that's because, one, a lot of times that isolation comes against Rudy, who's very good at it. And two, it's isolation defense happens while Rudy is still hovering close enough to the paint that whoever's going to take the shot bails out of it. So I'm not sure that all these things are completely replicable, but I just thought overall, you know, we just weren't very good. And I think that jumps out. We do have a few guys that have kind of suddenly fallen into slumps. We'll look at that as well as get you ready for the Spurs, who are without LaMarcus Aldridge, as we continue on today's edition of Locked on Jazz. Locked on Jazz is brought to you by The Store at 6200 South and 20th East, home of the great Mudslide Cookie. They're also now at the Gateway. I love going to The Store because there's two, each of the two stores have their own feel. The 6200 South 20th East is just clearly that community store. You walk in, you kind of can feel there's an energy to it. There's a happiness. You've got the high school kids from Brighton High School and other places that are helping the people out with their groceries. I was checked out the other day and the girl was helping me, was telling me, oh, I'm going to go to the U next year. And she was so excited. And it was just a cool, you could kind of feel it. And then, you know, you feel it with the products too. the meat's fabulous. The level of tender, loving care that Jeff and Scott give the place to make sure that everything's there. And Amy, who's does a huge amount of work for them, whether it's the bakery in the back, the Leatherby's ice cream and the Lockdown Mudslide ice cream, whether it's just the various Utah-owned products throughout, the great meat selection and hot food in the back, you can feel that the store has it. And then there's the Urban Store at the Gateway. That's a great spot to stop by for lunch, right across from the Children's Museum. They've got hot lunches with deli going as well. And then just kind of compact in there is everything you'd ever need for all of your shopping downtown as well. It's the store, 6200 South, 20th East, as well as the Gateway. And get your Mudslide cookie. By the way, this speaking of the Rockets game, I thought this was funny. So Matt Bullard is the TV analyst for the Rockets. Boy, they do a great broadcast. I listen to their broadcast. And, you know, the old days, like you'd go catch up with guys, right? And when you were young in the league and you'd meet after games and go out. Now we're old enough that we went to Restore Cryotherapy and then we went to lunch. We went to the whatever, the little Asian Vietnamese place right across from them on the backside of Sugar House. But we were laughing like, all right, so now for fun, we go to cryotherapy to get our body back over at Restore, and then we go to lunch. Now, sometimes we'll go ski, which case then the cryo probably would have been the right thing to do. Maybe that'll be next trip when we come out. But it's pretty funny that, like, we've got, the, you know you're getting old when is kind of the theme of my life right now. You know you're getting old when, hey, what do you want to do? Hey, let's go to cryo before lunch. We're classically old at this point. All right. So we have a few guys that suddenly dropped into a slump. The worrisome item would be whether or not Mike Conley's return has somehow had an impact here that's discombobulated things a little bit. I don't think so, but it's, you know, it's worth wondering whether there's just a change in rotation, and so some things just aren't quite as strong as they used to be. So if you look at Mike's been back, I think, for five games. We're 4-1. In those five games, some of the bench guys just aren't quite shooting as well. So Jordan Clarkson, last five games, 39% from the field, 19% from three. Mike Conley is shooting 46%. Joe Ingles, last five games, is suddenly at 38% from the field and 27% from three. I don't know if he's worn down at all, but we did increase his minutes. And then they brought him back down to kind of 29 or 30. Mike might be really valuable to Joe and just to lessen that burden a little bit. We're really, you know, we got to have Joe ready in April and May. Royce O'Neal, last five games, is suddenly at 38% and 18% from three. So we have a few guys that are suddenly in a little bit of a slump. Short term, the offense is still perfectly good over that time because Boyan and Donovan have been great, and Rudy's shooting 79% from the field. And George Niang has been playing really well, shooting 57% from the field and 53% from three. But just, you know, worth taking a note to kind of be aware of. And, well, you know, I'm not too worried about it, but keeping an eye on to see whether or not there's some, you know, Jordan might just be settling in a little bit after the euphoria of it all. And we did have some guys, you know, frankly, Joe was on a little bit of an outlier run there for a little bit where he was probably playing at a higher level than I think we could naturally assume at 54% from the field and 50% from three. So at some point that had to come back down. I wouldn't get too worried about it, but it's worth just taking a little bit of a note that we have some of these guys that maybe have had a momentary slump take place. From a lineup standpoint, you know, trying to look at what we're doing lineup-wise and looking at things still look good, right? So if you take Dante and you take Ed and you take Jeff Green and you take Emmanuel Mudiay – and you take them all off the floor, so you're kind of into the lineups of the players that we have. There's not, you know, we're plus 14 overall, which is incredible. Our offense is in the 97th percentile. Our defense is in the 89th. That starting lineup we have is plus 22.3. But the lineup with Mike Conley, Donovan Mitchell, Royce O'Neal, Boyan Bogdanovic, and Rudy Gobert is plus 14. And interestingly, it's doing it a little bit. It hasn't really clicked in offensively yet. The lineup that all of us projected to be great, which is Conley, Mitchell, Bogdanovich, Ingles, and Gobert, is plus five. You know, some of our bench units, Clarkson, Mitchell, Ingles, Niang, Bradley is plus 27 with an offensive rebounding rate of 30% thanks to Tony Bradley. We only have one lineup that doesn't seem to be actually, and that involves Rajon Tucker, who doesn't play. So let's take Rajon Tucker out. So there still isn't, I mean, still all the signs are, obviously one night's not going to change that, but your sample size is growing, and so you kind of keep checking back on these numbers. And, you know, they're just, the only negative lineup right now is Mike Conley, Jordan Clarkson, Donovan Mitchell, Royce O'Neal, and Tony Bradley. That one's not great. It's about a minus 20, I think it is. And then for 100 possessions, the other one's Mike Conley, Jordan Clarkson, Bojan Bogdanovic, George Niang, Rudy Gobert hasn't clicked in. It's played only 32 possessions, though. So these are both, you know, crazy small possessions. You'd like to have 100 possessions to be able to take some sign of things. But our main possession groups we're all using are all still great. So, you know, worth keeping a little bit of an eye on. Some of it gets to when you have Bojan and George Niang on the floor together, your defensive turnover rate gets really, really low. You just don't like that's not great. And so that one, I think, hurts us a little bit in both those two lineups we're talking about. We just have not been able to defend well enough, and that's been the issue. Spurs tonight, no LaMarcus Aldridge. So that changes who they are. Jakob Poeltl has been playing. He's really good. I mean, he's a really nice NBA player. He's become a pretty strong piece to their puzzle. He's played some nice center. He actually does a nice job of dropping, covering the rim. He's big. He's tall. He does a lot of good things. DeMar DeRozan's been playing super well. That'll be the main task at hand. They're not bad without LaMarcus Aldridge. Like, actually, they're actually much better. For the season, they're minus one. Without LaMarcus Aldridge, they're plus 5.5. Their lineup of Patty Mills, Derek White, Lonnie Walker, Rudy Gay, and Jakob Poeltl, so DeMar DeRozan leaves the floor, is unstoppable. It's plus 31 points per 100 possessions. So that's worth keeping an eye on. When they have DeMar DeRozan and LaMarcus Aldridge off the floor, they're really good. It's kind of weird, huh? Makes you wonder. You take both LaMarcus Aldridge and DeMar DeRozan off the floor, they're plus 15.2 in 935 possessions. So, you know, when they do that tonight, that's worth keeping an eye on. I think that's how we lose. So they're actually better. Without Aldridge on the floor, they're plus 5.5. Without DeRozan on the floor, they're plus 6.3. And without both of them on the floor, they're plus 15. How's that for jacked up? Isn't that weird? Their shot distribution is different than a lot of the league. They do not shoot a lot of threes. They shoot them well, but they do not shoot a lot of them. They do not turn the ball over. That's kind of the signature of what they do. We don't force turnovers, and they don't offensive rebound, which is nice for us, though they won't try to get us there. They have an offensive rebound. And they don't force turnovers, which is good for us. They're not particularly good defensively. They're 20th and 23rd the last 2 years, ever since they lost Kawhi. They have not been great defensively. But their shot selection's interesting. They are 29th in the league in all threes after being 30 the year before. They're 28th in the league in above the break threes. They're 26th in the league in corner threes. The more stunning one is they're 30th in the league at the rim. They're only taking 28% of their shots at the rim. So their shot distribution is just whacked out. They're taking 43% of their shots in the mid-range. And it's interesting. So they don't turn the ball over, so they obviously value that. But at the same time, they don't turn anyone over, which seems counterintuitive to me to care that much about one side of things but not do it on the other. Because if you think it's so important to not turn the ball over, you would think that you would actually then force some turnovers. But nonetheless, they're the third best defensive rebounding team, and they're 29th in the league in offensive rebounding. So who knows how this all works. I think it's a 7:30 tip-off tonight, by the way. Or actually, back home, it's a 6:30 tip-off tonight. Ron and I will be on the floor at 5:30. Great TNT special with Kobe. We'll touch on it when we continue on Locked On Jazz. So TNT did a special last night. Jerry West came by, but it was Shaq and Charles and Kenny, and then Reggie Miller came by. They really did a wonderful show. Very heartfelt, very sincere. Jerry West was brought down the house. He actually told an amazing story about while he was at Memphis, Kobe Bryant was so mad at everyone with the Lakers. I remember this, that he was going to go sign with the Clippers. He had a deal agreed to. He was going to the Clippers. I remember this. Everyone's like, you'd never do it, but you kind of felt like he might. And Jerry West got on the line with Kobe and was like, you cannot play for that owner. Which also tells you like how much everybody knew who Donald Sterling was. You cannot play for that owner. You cannot do it, Kobe. It's interesting, like the moments in history that changed this league when you hear that story and wonder. Shaq was really interesting. I'm going to play a little Dr. Phil on Shaq here. So Shaq was really broken. And Shaq and Kobe have not spoken since the 60-point game against the Jazz to close his career. Yet Shaq shared that Kobe was texting his kids. Kobe seems like a serial texter. Like, I think there's a level of Kobe and his, you know, we've had such an insight into his personality that he was always trying to add. He was always trying to give advice. He was always trying to help. He was always trying to give guidance. That's also always in those positions are always that of control and power in all of these relationships. And, you know, the relationship that didn't work very well was when Shaq referred to him as his little brother. Right, I think Kobe was a much better big brother than a little brother. Reggie Miller told an incredible story about how he used to always just refer to Jordan as Black Cat. He wasn't going to call him by name or call him MJ or anything like that. He called him Black Cat from a competition standpoint. He didn't want it was kind of dehumanizing him. And Kobe was 17, 18 years old, just in the league. They shared the same agent, and so Reggie Miller was kind of there to tutor Kobe Bryant, and Reggie Miller is telling him about this, and Kobe's asking every story imaginable about Jordan, wanting to know everything he possibly can. And Reggie Miller, at the end of the conversation, the 18 or 17-year-old Kobe says to Reggie Miller, well, you're going to probably refer to me as Caramel Cat. Which is a pretty audacious comment, right? Like, I'm going to be the next Jordan. Howard Beck wrote, interestingly, in the Bleacher Report that everybody else kind of, you know, Jordan was too big a figure. Kobe's the one who, like, actually looked at Jordan and was like, okay, I'm going to be that. Like, I've got it in me to go be that. Back to Shaq, what I thought was probably good to take from Shaq, it's very cliched, but it's true. Shaq was talking about, you know, Shaq was broken. And Reggie Miller was broken a little bit too. And they, you know, I think Shaq, the vibe I got, I'm definitely making some stuff up here, but I think it's reasonable, is that here's Shaq is, he talked to Kobe, they kind of buried the hatchet, they done the TNT interview together, but Shaq still had a little sourness, right? That Kobe had forced him out of LA and that Shaq didn't get the end of his legacy in Los Angeles and Kobe did. And like, it's real. Like, that's fair. And I had the feeling that Kobe was sending olive branches to Shaq with all these texts to his kids and things like that. And Shaq was playing stubborn, which is totally reasonable. And now all of a sudden Kobe's gone. And Shaq just really seemed like this guy at the end where he's like, you guys just better get used to it. I'm just going to tell you I love you. I'm going to tell you I love you all the time. Where, you know, that little stubbornness just wasn't worth it at all. And I thought that was the takeaway. You know, we're really seeing people at the rawest, most human emotions. I mean, I probably, I'll admit, like last night I sent out about 20 texts, right? Like I'm pretty busy. I'm not the best ever at staying in touch and connecting and doing all these things. And I try really hard, actually. So I'm not the best at it, but I'm not terrible, honestly. But I sent some extra texts yesterday. Like there were a few extra messages that went out yesterday to various people. And it's interesting how all this impacts us, right? You know, it's the world I live in. So I'm kind of openly, my friends who are not in the business think it's very strange. I guess this has now become about me. I didn't mean it to be. I think they kind of laugh at me about this when, like, you know, Kobe's death and, like, I'm bothered and clearly kind of undone. And they kind of like, yeah, whatever. Like, it's the world I live in. I also learn from these guys every day. Like, they're brilliant. They're virtuosos. They're geniuses. And I learn from them on a pretty regular basis about, you know, how to get better, what's going on, all of those kind of things. So, you know, watching Shaq and everyone, these are, you know, the very huge human display by everyone on that show last night, if you got a chance to see it. If not, go to NBA on TNT, and I'd go watch the clips on Twitter today. It'd take some time. You might want to do it, you know, if you don't want someone to see a tear come out of your eye, you might want to do it in a way that no one sees you. It was a great show. It's interesting to watch how everyone continues to kind of grieve and deal with this. And the fascinating one on Kobe the player, which it's interesting to me, is because I feel like we already did the eulogy on Kobe the player. He had a whole year of it. And so now what's the loss is his daughter, which was going to be his next act. And then also all of his professional next act. But I think it's also was just, you know, a force bigger than life that got taken away. I think it was Jackie McMullen said, of course it took 52 firefighters to put out the fire, right? Like Kobe was that big. So anyway, lots of rambling there on something that has just been, you know, hovering over the entire league and probably all of us. The Shrine in LA is pretty incredible. I think for those of us that are not Laker fans and not in LA, and the Shrine in LA that's taking place is quite a statement to one person's impact on the large, you know, one of the largest cities in the world. It's pretty incredible. All right, thanks very much for tuning in. We'll do a live show tomorrow from Denver, so I look forward to talking with you then. Thanks very much. Wednesday, why don't we take a minute? And if you have not listened to Hollinger and Duncan this week, it's really quite good. So take a second right now and tell your smart device to listen to the most recent episode of podcast Hollinger and Duncan.